shaped segment on the decryption key. It was located in the lower left-hand corner and enclosed the letter S. Langdon wrote down S. The next symbol on the pyramid was a dotted square missing its right side. That shape on the decryption grid enclosed the letter O. He wrote down O. The third symbol was a simple square which enclosed the letter E. Langdon wrote down E. S-O-E. He continued, picking up speed until he had completed the entire grid. Now, as he gazed down at his finished translation, Langdon let out a puzzled sigh. Hardly what I'd call a eureka moment. Bellamy's face showed the hint of a smile. As you know, Professor, the ancient mysteries are reserved only for the truly enlightened. Right, Langdon said, frowning. Apparently, I don't qualify. Chapter 50. In a basement office deep inside CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, the same 16-character Masonic cipher glowed brightly on a high-definition computer monitor. Senior OS analyst Nola Kay sat alone and studied the image that had been emailed to her 10 minutes ago by her boss, Director Inoue Sato. Is this some kind of joke? Nola knew it was not, of course. Director Sato had no sense of humor, and the events of tonight were anything but a joking matter. Nola's high-level clearance within the CIA's all-seeing Office of Security had opened her eyes to the shadow worlds of power. But what Nola had witnessed in the last 24 hours had changed her impressions forever of the secrets that powerful men kept. Yes, Director, Nola now said, cradling the phone on her shoulder as she talked to Sato. The engraving is indeed the Masonic cipher. However, the clear text is meaningless. It appears to be a grid of random letters. She gazed down at her decryption.
It must say something, Sato insisted.
Not unless it has a second layer of encryption that I'm not aware of.
Any guesses?
Sato asked. It's a grid-based matrix, so I could run the usual vignette, grills, trellises, and so forth. But no promises, especially if it's a one-time pad.
Do what you can, and do it fast. How about the X-ray?
Nola swiveled her chair to a second system, which displayed a standard security X-ray of someone's bag. Sato had requested information on what appeared to be a small pyramid inside a cube-shaped box. Normally, a 2-inch-tall object would not be an issue of national security unless it was made of enriched plutonium. This one was not. It was made of something almost equally startling.
Image density analysis was conclusive, Nola said. 19.3 grams per cubic centimeter. It's pure gold. Very, very valuable.
Anything else?
Actually, yes. The density scan picked up minor irregularities on the surface of the gold pyramid. It turns out the gold is engraved with text.
Really?
Sato sounded hopeful.
What does it say?
I can't tell yet. The inscription is extremely faint. I'm trying to enhance with filters, but the resolution on the X-ray is not great.
Okay, keep trying. Call me when you have something.
Yes, ma'am.
And Nola?
Sato's tone turned ominous.
As with everything you have learned in the last 24 hours, the images of the stone pyramid and gold capstone are classified at the highest levels of security. You are to consult no one. You report to me directly. I want to make sure that is clear.
Of course, ma'am.
Good. Keep me posted.
Sato hung up. Nola rubbed her eyes and looked blearily back at her computer screens. She had not slept in over 36 hours, and she knew damn well she would not sleep again until this crisis had reached its conclusion, whatever that may be. Back at the Capitol Visitor Center, 4 black-clad CIA field op specialists stood at the entrance to the tunnel, peering hungrily down the dimly lit shaft, like a pack of dogs eager for the hunt. Sato approached, having just hung up from a call.
Gentlemen,
she said, still holding the architect's key,
are your mission parameters clear?
Affirmative, the lead agent replied. We have 2 targets. The first is an engraved stone pyramid, approximately 1 foot tall. The second is a smaller cube-shaped package, approximately 2 inches tall. Both were last seen in Robert Langdon's shoulder bag.
Correct,
Sato said.
These 2 items must be retrieved quickly and intact. Do you have any questions?
Parameters for use of force? Sato's shoulder was still throbbing from where Bellamy had struck her with a bone.
As I said, it is of critical importance that these items be retrieved.
Understood. The four men turned and headed into the darkness of the tunnel. Sato lit a cigarette and watched them disappear. Chapter 51. Catherine Solomon had always been a prudent driver, but now she was pushing her Volvo at over 90 as she fled blindly up the Suitland Parkway. Her trembling foot had been lodged on the accelerator for a full mile before her panic began to lift. She now realized her uncontrollable shivering was no longer solely from fear. I'm freezing. The wintry night air was gushing through her shattered window, buffeting her body like an Arctic wind. Her stockinged feet were numb, and she reached down for her spare pair of shoes, which she kept beneath the passenger seat. As she did, she felt a stab of pain from the bruise on her throat, where the powerful hand had latched onto her neck. The man who had smashed through her window bore no resemblance to the blonde-haired gentleman whom Catherine knew as Dr. Christopher Abaddon. His thick hair and smooth, tanned complexion had disappeared. His shaved head, bare chest, and makeup-smeared face had been unveiled as a terrifying tapestry of tattoos. She heard his voice again, whispering to her in the howl of wind outside her broken window. Catherine, I should have killed you years ago, the night I killed your mother. Catherine shivered, feeling no doubt. That was him. She had never forgotten the look of fiendish violence in his eyes, nor had she ever forgotten the sound of her brother's single gunshot, which had killed this man, propelling him off a high ledge into the frozen river below, where he plummeted through the ice and never resurfaced. Investigators had searched for weeks, never finding his body, and finally decided it had been washed away by the current out to the Chesapeake Bay. They were wrong, she now knew. He is still alive, and he's back. Catherine felt angst-ridden as the memories flooded back. It was almost exactly 10 years ago, Christmas Day. Catherine, Peter, and their mother, her entire family, were gathered at their sprawling stone mansion in Potomac, nestled on a 200-acre wooded estate with its own river running through it. As was tradition, their mother worked diligently in the kitchen, rejoicing in the holiday custom of cooking for her two children. Even at 75 years of age, Isabel Solomon was an exuberant cook, and tonight the mouth-watering smells of roast venison, parsnip gravy, and garlic mashed potatoes wafted through the house. While mother prepared the feast, Catherine and her brother relaxed in the conservatory, discussing Catherine's latest fascination, a new field called